so," Graves said, his attention fully upon Leeson now. "You ordered these men to destroy this captured vessel because you lost your nerve?"
"It wasn't like that, sir. I—"
"Answer the question, adjunct, yes or no."
"Well, I guess that's so, sir. I'm sorry. It was an error in judgment."
Graves nodded. "Indeed it was." The centurion turned to Harris. "Veteran, as the most senior non-com in this platoon, I'm temporarily elevating you to the status of platoon leader. Are you ready to take on that responsibility?"
Harris looked from Graves, then to Leeson, confused.
"Well, sir, I think the platoon already has a good leader. I don't—"
Blam. Graves' sidearm had gone off. Leeson toppled forward onto his face, his helmet a smoking ruin. "I repeat, Veteran Harris," Graves said in a perfectly even, calm voice. "Are you ready to assume command of this platoon?"
"Absolutely, sir."
"Good. Now gather up your troops. We're marching back toward Winslade. He's gotten himself into some kind of trouble."
That was it. Leeson was gone. We stripped his body of whatever useful equipment he had, and we left him lying there on the ground. I felt bad about it, but damn, that man needed to learn how to stretch the truth properly if he was going to pull off stunts like this. As we marched double time back toward the giant trees, Graves moved to my side and trotted there beside me. "Sir?" I asked him. I couldn't help but glance at his sidearm. Fortunately, it was back in his holster.
"McGill," he said, "I still smell your signature brand of bullshit on this fiasco. If I learn that you had a lever on Leeson, that he confessed to save your sorry skin, I'll—"
"Sir, it was the damnedest thing. Leeson just up and lost it, I swear. Before any of us could stop him, the whole place went up. In his defense, though, those eggs were pretty creepy. He might need a psych eval when he gets revived."
Graves slid his eyes to meet mine for a moment. He shook his head. "Sometimes I don't know if you're smart, dumb, or just a smartass."
"My grandpa used to say I was one part genius and three parts retard, sir."
"That sounds about right. I can only commiserate with the man."
He moved off then, and I sighed heavily, releasing a lung full of tension. Sure, I'd sold out Leeson, but he'd already been executed in the field. With any luck, that wouldn't amount to a permadeath. Graves usually forgave a man after meting out his own particular brand of harsh, instant justice.
Chapter 33. It had been a long while since I'd served directly under Veteran Harris. We'd often had trouble getting along, but we'd always pulled it together when push came to shove in a combat situation. Today was no different. Harris looked at me, and I looked at him. We veered toward one another, and he gave me a nod.
"That should have been you back there, taking the bolt in the face,"
Harris said. "I disagree. Leeson made his own choices."
"You coached him in your special brand of chicanery, and look what happened."
"His choice, Harris," I repeated. "He's a full-grown man." Harris looked at me sidelong.
"You think you could have gotten away with destroying that captured ship, don't you? You figured you're above the chain of command. What makes you—"
2 o'clock, vet," I said, pointing. Harris dropped his bitching about my behavior and unlimbered his morph rifle in a single smooth action. He adjusted its structure into a long-range configuration.
"Enemy sighted,"
he shouted, engaging the unit-wide channel. There they were. Towering monsters, the size of redwoods themselves, their long, dangling limbs bent in curves rather than angles. I'd done battle with podwalkers before, but this time seemed different. It took me a moment to figure out what it was.
"Command!"
I heard a breathless female voice in my helmet. It was Kivi. She was in the rear of our formation, running with those of us who were unarmored.
"The podwalkers are being herded. See those smaller creatures at their feet? That's what you have to kill."
Graves spoke up next. "McGill, has your team seen those spiky-looking things before?"
"Yes, sir," I said.
I reported them just before you brought us home with a missile barrage. Klaber explained they're direct servitors of the enemy brain plants. We call them spiders, sir.
They do look spidery. So it's their job to get the podwalkers to charge in a single mass, is that it? Makes sense. I never did figure out how the walkers were able to coordinate. They don't seem too intelligent alone.
The walkers were encircling Winslade's position. The sound of the action was reaching us now, snaps, whines, and ripping noises like distant thunder. I could tell a terrific firefight was in progress. The sound of the weaponry was intermixed with the howl of the enemy.
Okay, here's the plan, Graves said. We're going to dive into the thicket of ferns to our right. Try to stay together. Don't straggle. We'll swing around under the cover of the undergrowth and hit the aliens right in the butt, pinning them between our guns and Winslade's.
I swallowed. Graves's plan had its merits, but it was going to take us close to the enemy. I'd been hoping that we'd engage them from range with our rifles and belchers. I'd figured we'd distract the walkers and help Winslade that way. Graves was planning a much more direct and aggressive play. We were going to be under their feet, in the thick of it. Harris was still running near me. Resignedly, he reconfigured his rifle again, turning it into a short, stubby carbine weapon. I did the same. This was going to be a close assault action, so we needed our guns to operate with a high firing rate. We soon dove into the thicket of ferns. We would normally have been running at speeds only an Olympic runner could match, aided by our exoskeletal legs, but we couldn't do that this time. Too many of our troops didn't have armored legs to propel them along. Already I could hear our lighter-equipped troops puffing. The rearmost were struggling to keep up.
We should slow down, I told Harris.
We're losing our lightest troops.
Harris shook his head. Wrong. We'll plow in at a dead run. Let Keevy and the rest fall behind. They'll last longer.
Thinking about it, I nodded in agreement. Harris was right. Why endanger our most vulnerable troops right off the bat? Might as well give them a fighting chance. The more I thought about it, the more I liked Harris's manner of bending his orders. I figured I still had a thing or two to learn from him. Not just in adjusting orders, but also when it came down to tactics. He got the job done any way he could. If he won the fight, the officers weren't likely to complain just because he'd done it his own way. The ferns were thick now, slamming and slashing us like palm fronds in a hurricane.
McGill,
Keevy called on a private channel.
I'm over 100 meters behind you. If you don't slow down now...
Squad, I said, overriding her voice and all the rest of the chatter among my people. When the foremost elements engage, halt and find a good firing position. Engage at will. Sargon answered me then.
I like that. Thanks for the clarification, vet.
I knew what he meant. The rest probably did, too. I'd just edited our orders a little more. Graves wanted us to hit hard as a single shocking strike. But what was going to happen now would be a more spread-out force, all firing together but not physically close to those deadly stomping feet. There wasn't much more time to think. At first, we caught a few glimpses of the enemy looming over us like trees that were bending and then straightening up again. What could they be up to? It looked like...
Centurion, I called. It looks like they're throwing rocks at Winslade's troops, is that right?
I wish, McGill, he called back. They're throwing things all right. They're throwing living pods. Winslade's men are on the receiving end. They can't keep a coherent line because the enemy keeps smashing those pods right into their midst.
I got it, then. The big pod walkers were picking up and throwing the smaller creatures. We closed in fast and broke out into the open. The whole battlefield was laid out before my eyes. There were pods, greenish-black things that reminded me of the eggs we'd seen inside the invasion ship. But these pods were much bigger. They were about 3 meters long and 2 meters thick. They must have weighed a ton each. The pod walkers bent, picked them up, and threw them like pine cones into Winslade's line. As a counter to this action, Winslade's people were lashing the walkers with a storm of small arms fire. As I watched, a pod split open under withering fire, and green-white liquid drenched the walker that had lifted it above his head. A pall of white smoke rose up from the walker's head section as the acid went to work. Sargon took careful aim and fired his belcher. He shot for a pod raised high, not for the walker. He opened up another pod before the walker could throw it, copying what Winslade's people had done.
"Score one for our side,"
Sargon whooped as the walker fell, thrashing.
"Good shooting, weaponeer," Harris shouted. "Platoon, engage."
We opened up with our Morph rifles, advancing at a walking pace into close range. We sprayed a deadly hail of bullets right up into the butts of the nearest walkers, who didn't seem to know we were there until that moment. Stupidly howling with pain and surprise, the towering giants turned on us. One stood right over me. He lifted a pod high like a primitive man with a rock lofted in both hands. I thought it was over. It was a shame, really. I'd only just gotten into the fight. But when the walker smashed down the pod, it didn't strike me dead. It crushed Harris instead. Acid exploded, spraying my armor and burning through my smart cloth, where I wasn't wearing any armor. The newly hatched creature inside shivered and rose slowly from the shattered pod. Cursing and dancing away, I didn't bother to look for Harris. He had to be dead. No one could take such a blow and live. Even if the hurled pod hadn't broken his spine, the gush of deadly liquids would have finished the job. Nearby, troops blasted the acid-dripping alien apart. It was indeed one of the same kind that had invaded Minotaur when we'd first entered the star system. "Advance!" I shouted, realizing I was in command now. "I want concentrated fire on the walkers that turn to face us. Ignore the rest." Again, I was editing our orders. Graves had told us to light up all the walkers to distract them, to keep them from overwhelming Winslade's line. But I figured that plan was flawed. If they just turned around and killed us all quickly, we wouldn't be doing much to help our fellow troops. No, I wanted to kill as many of the enemy as I could, one at a time, if possible. The walker that had killed Harris went down fast. We tore it apart with hundreds of rounds at short range. Two more walkers turned on us, pods held high. Sargon beamed one's head off, and it threw its pod right into the back of the other walker. I had to grin at that. We'd caught a break. They both died before they could do much else. It took a moment after that to survey the battlefield. I didn't like what I saw. The other two platoons and Graves's unit weren't faring quite as well as we were. Tactics or luck had failed them. I checked my tactical displays. We'd lost all our officers except for Graves himself. Half our troops were dead and the enemy didn't appear to be dying as fast as we were. We'd broken a hole in the enemy line, but it wasn't enough to call a victory yet. There were at least 10 walkers hunting down and destroying Toro's platoon, one man at a time.
"Harris," Graves called.
"Harris is down, sir," I answered.
"All right, McGill. I need your platoon to support Toro's right now. Flank right. Attack immediately."
I marshaled my people and we advanced toward Toro's group. As I watched, a big hand dipped down and scooped up a fleeing trooper. I think it was a bio, judging by her light gear. The walker crushed her with a convulsive squeeze of that many-fingered hand. Dropping the limp pulp, it reached for another. We began to light them up, one after another. After half the enemy was down, the rest turned and made a lumbering charge toward our position. I knew as they stumbled toward us, we couldn't take them all. Not when they were focused on us single-mindedly. I tried to contact Graves for clarification, but he was dead. I was on my own. There wasn't much time for thought, but I had one burning question in my mind. Who'd ordered these walkers to act in a coordinated fashion? Scanning the battlefield, I saw them, a dozen or so spiders up on the back of a high root behind us. Overlooking the region, they were quiet, calm, and deliberative. "Platoon, disengage!" I roared. "Follow me up this root structure, double time. If you don't have powered legs, well, hide someplace." To tell the truth, I don't quite know why I gave the command. Tactical ingenuity? No, not entirely. Rage was more like it. I wanted to kill the spiders who'd ordered the death of my entire unit. They sat smugly up there on their high root until they saw what we were doing. Then, like cowards, they began to dive off on either side. We reached them seconds later and tore apart the slowest spiders with ripping blasts of fire from our guns. Turning back to the walkers, I'd expected to find them charging up the route after us, but they weren't. They were milling around searching for prey in random patterns, without the direction of the spiders. They'd broken off their attack. Up on top of the ridge-like route, we found stacks of unopened pods, a big pile of them in a bowl-like area. The pods were big ones, juicy and ripe with corrosives. My troops were firing down the steep sides of the routes, tagging the spider commanders in the ass, but it wasn't enough. Many were getting away. "Roll these pods after them! Move, people, move!" My last dozen troops hastened to obey. Sargon was still with me, along with a few others I knew, Della, Sladen, and Marquis. We worked in teams of three, rolling the pods over the sides of the route. Dropping pods and shooting after the spiders, we caught a few more and watched them die. Then we rolled the rest of the pods into the face of the walkers that were closest. That's when things changed on the battlefield as a whole. The walkers had been operating as an organized formation of troops, but now that we'd killed most of their commanders, they were bereft of intelligent leadership. Some stood dumbly, swaying and looking around, confused. Others charged blindly at whatever enemy they saw. They stopped throwing pods and marched directly into Winslade's guns. They were cut down with focused fire. A few more tried to get us up on top of the route, but we were ready for that. We rolled pods down onto them, burning away their limbs with acids and blasting them with concentrated fire. As the route was relatively narrow for the walkers, they were only able to approach one at a time. After a few minutes passed, they were all dead. Every one of them. Not one of the enemy walkers had retreated. None had asked for quarter. That suited me just fine, as I wasn't in a merciful mood anyway. Chapter 34. Long after dark, my squad marched back to the lifter, bone-tired but feeling victorious. Sure, we'd lost the ship, and the walkers had killed half our troops. Despite these realities, we'd managed to defeat the enemy and kill some of their commanders. When I got to the lifter and we passed through the outer defenses, the troops in the ditches eyed us in concern. We must have looked a sight. We had tarnished, half-melted armor, dirty faces, and plenty of wounded troops. A runner came down the ship's ramp before my squad made it halfway through the camp.
"Veteran McGill," he asked me.
I recognized him then. It was none other than the regular trooper, Lau. How many times had this poor bastard died on Death World, mostly under my command? I didn't even want to start counting.
"What is it, Lau?" I asked him. "Graves is out of the oven. He wants you to attend an officer's meeting upper deck."
I heaved a sigh. "What the hell for?" Lau shrugged.
"I guess because he died and didn't see the end of the battle. Winslade is up there, too. Both of them missed it, but they know you were there."
"Right, okay. Thanks, Lau. Get some food and rest. That goes for the rest of you, too." Kivi, Sargon, and a few other survivors of the long day moved tiredly toward the chow line, which was long, but not as long as it should have been. We'd lost a lot of people today. Kivi walked up to me, put a hand on my shoulder, and gave me a worried look.
"Don't let them blame you for anything, James," she said in a low voice. "You fought well. You did the best job you could have done today."
"Thanks, Kivi," I said. "But I doubt they're angry. Hell, we're the ones who broke the attack in the end."
"That's the spirit," she said,
and she walked away to join the chow line. I looked after her with a frown on my face. She was a tech. That meant she had a special line on inside rumors. Techs chatted and texted one another all day long like birds on a wire. What could she know that I didn't? Resolutely, I mounted the ramp and marched up to the upper deck. When I got there, a tight group of officers were sitting in chairs, chatting. Graves was there, but not Leeson or Toro. So many people had been killed, they were reviving just one top officer from each unit and building up the rank-and-file regulars first before popping out the adjuncts. Someone had to man those trenches outside, after all. Notably missing were Turov, Drusus, and Winslade. I knew Winslade had died, but the other two should be there. I didn't have long to wait. I found a Danish and shoved it into my mouth, then gulped some sewery coffee when everyone jumped to attention. Drusus walked in and ran his eyes over the crowd. At ease. I chewed fast, gulped, and put my cup down. Drusus walked right up to me, which I hadn't been expecting. He looked me over. "McGill," he said, as if he were looking at a puzzle. "You lived through the battle, didn't you?" Nodding, I dared a brief smile. The Tribune didn't return it. Instead, he made a sweeping gesture toward the rest of the group present. "Do you realize that none of the others present here today made it to the end of the action in the forest? They were all either killed or they didn't go on the mission in the first place." Glancing around, I noticed for the first time that no one else looked like they'd been sweating in the mud all day. There wasn't a scratch or any sign of oily sweat in the group. Fresh revives and loungers, the lot of them. "Huh," I managed. "That's against the odds, I'd say." Tribune Drusus nodded, eyeing me closely. His stare wasn't an accusatory one. He just looked at me thoughtfully. "That's what I thought, at first," he said. "That your survival was against the odds. Unlikely, even. However, now I believe it was due to an enemy tactic." I hardly had time to absorb what he was talking about before Imperata Galina Turov showed up next. She looked as pissed as a short-tailed cat. She put her fists on her hips and stared at us. Everyone jumped up again, standing at attention. We didn't salute because we were in a combat zone. All that was normal. But what surprised me was that she didn't tell us to stand at ease. She walked among the group, eyeing us like we'd all screwed up. Finally, she stopped in front of me and aimed a finger into my face.
"This man," she said, "has shamed you all. That's what's going into my after-action report. You died like rats in a ditch. It was a grand embarrassment for the lot of you. On top of that, Graves managed to burn up the only other functional transport on this planet. I'm disgusted."
Eyes wide, I tried not to look at her disrespectfully when she turned around to glare at the rest of the officers. Keeping my eyes high and locked was always hard for me to do when Turov was around. We'd had a few inappropriate encounters in the past, and she was looking mighty fine today. Something about being revived and given a young body again was confusing when it came down to appearances. In Turov's case, it was worse than usual. She was far older and more politically dangerous than she looked. She held the rank of Imperata, which meant she could command multiple legions in the field. The ancient Roman rank was the equivalent of a 2-star general in the pre-empire armies of Earth. Dangerous, powerful, and manipulative, she was also a rather petite woman, with calculating eyes, short hair, and a finely shaped rear end. After her last revival, she'd come back looking like a 20-year-old. That was a disturbing appearance for any high-level officer under the best of circumstances.
"That's right,"
she said, running her eyes over me speculatively.
"While the rest of you died out there, or didn't bother to go, this country bumpkin lived, and not by hiding under his desk in the lifter."
"Sir," Graves said, "may I say something?"
"If you must, Centurion."
"You're mischaracterizing the situation. We fought hard on the battlefield. McGill lived, but I agree with Drusus. He survived due to enemy tactics, not some innate virtue on the veteran's part. By saying that, I don't mean to lessen the importance of McGill's role, but I feel we should clarify things."
"Nonsense," Turov said.
She put a hand up to silence Graves, who was about to speak further.
Yes, I know about the theory that the spider creatures that command the enemy forces targeted our officers purposefully. I'm not entirely convinced that's true, but I am convinced that McGill targeted their officers in return and broke the enemy by doing so.
I blinked and looked around the room. She was right, of course, but I wasn't sure how she'd analyze the details of the battle so quickly. We'd only just returned and made preliminary reports. There were suit cameras, of course, but going through all that data took time. Turov made a gesture indicating we should be seated. We all found a chair and sat down. There were plenty to go around with so many people still stuck in the revival queues. She began to strut around the tactical display table while we all stared at her.
"This situation is intolerable," she said. "It's only a matter of time before the enemy marches out here in strength and finishes us off. It's my firm belief that they're reluctant to leave the shade of their forest, and that's the only reason we're still breathing."
She tapped at the tactical display system, and it sprang to life. The lifter had been set down in the center of the region destroyed by the broadsides. The forest appeared as a green half-crescent around our position, with the sea at our backs.
"If I'd known when we first arrived in this star system what I know today," she said with feeling, "I would have flattened every inch of the forest without mercy."
No one said anything as she tapped here and there on the table. The red shapes appeared. They were oblong blobs representing enemy troop masses. There were an alarming number of blobs.
"Thousands," she said. "More pods are hatching every hour. Our buzzers are working overtime just cataloging them all. We're detecting numerous varieties of enemies as they hatch. Walkers, the smaller acid monsters, spider commanders, and other types we've yet to encounter in battle. Some of them fly, a few even swim."
More blocks appeared behind us in the sea. I'd been of the opinion that was a safe zone for us, a last-ditch area to retreat. Such hopes were quickly dashed as she kept tapping and revealing more enemies.
"I now wonder if the assault ship was set up as some kind of decoy," she said. "It really doesn't matter at this point. We're going to be wiped out within the next 100 hours. They could probably overwhelm us much sooner if they all decided to march at once. But they've demonstrated some degree of caution since their first encounter with the lifter's defenses."
"How do you suggest we defeat them, Imperator?" Tribune Drusus asked. He'd maintained a quiet presence this whole time.
"Since the moment when I was finally revived," she said, giving him a dark look, "I've been dedicating my strategic thinking toward that end. My first thought was to retake Minotaur. That's why we attempted to capture their invasion ship. Although we lost that gambit, at least we destroyed their flight capacity. If we regain control of Minotaur now, we control this star system. They will be at our mercy."
"You're certain they don't have any other ships?" Drusus asked.
"Yes. The techs have used suborbital drones to sweep most of this planet. As far as we can tell, they don't have any more ships, nor do they have another shipyard facility. We destroyed their colony base, their factories, their refineries, etc. We crippled them. Unfortunately, we've also crippled ourselves with losses. We have only one lifter and half a cohort of troops."
Drusus cleared his throat. "We can still launch this lifter up into space and take back Minotaur. If we win the assault, we win the campaign."
She nodded briefly. "This is true, but I still think it's too risky. Failure means utter destruction for the entire Legion. For now, I've ruled out such a direct approach."
Several of the officers present squirmed in their seats. They clearly didn't agree with her, but were too cowed to speak up. "Well," Drusus said, "if surface-to-space assault is off the table, what other options are there? They continue to grow new pods every hour. We can't revive troops fast enough to keep up. Additionally, our ammo and equipment levels..."
"I know all that,"
Turov snapped. She turned to point at me again.
"McGill has given us the answer."
No one in the room could have been more surprised than I was at her statement. I swallowed and put on my best poker face. Every officer gave me a flat stare, except for Turov. She gave me a fleeting half-smile.
"That's right," she said. "Crazy McGill may have saved us. Observe."
She began to play vids then. I recognized the clips. First, she showed a shot of me burning spiders and ordering Sargon to shoot the cactus-like nexus in the deep forest. The officers watched with interest. Some winced as Claver explained the dangers, but I killed the plant brain anyway. After witnessing this, several officers looked at me in astonishment. This was their first exposure to my performance in the field. My butt seemed to want to crawl out of my chair, but there was no escape for either of us.
"Next clip," Turov said. "This one is from today's action."
She played another vid, again from Kivi. I suddenly understood why Kivi had been trying to warn me I might be in trouble. She'd probably been ordered to surrender these clips to Turov and had surmised I was to be investigated. This clip showed our final, valiant charge up the route to kill the spiders.
"Impressive," Graves said. "You attacked with the ferocity of soldiers who know they're about to die and yet want to strike one final blow. I see in your troops no hint of breaking morale. They followed you up there knowing they would probably die. By doing so, they took the initiative from the enemy without hesitation."
I nodded. "My squad is the best, sir." Turov pursed her lips and froze the clip on the singular image of a spider, dying and curling with acid and bullets destroying it.
"This, then, is the essence of my plan," she said. "We need to take the fight to the enemy, the real enemy, those who are making the strategic decisions. Claver calls this varied species Wur. Like a hive of social insects, they have several forms, and all of them serve a purpose."
As she spoke, she displayed examples of each of the aliens we'd encountered.
"These plants have a critical weakness," she said. "Most of them don't possess much in the way of a brain. The hierarchy goes something like this. At the bottom are the ferns, which are consumed by the mobile creatures. Next up are the trees. The purpose of the trees is to produce pods and provide a livable environment for the rest. Above them, the spawn of these trees are podwalkers and other stupid creatures. Commanding the spawn of the trees are these spiders. They are local, tactical leaders."
The group followed her presentation, nodding with interest. It was compelling. I'd experienced most of what she was talking about, but I hadn't spent a lot of time figuring out the details of the ecosystem or the enemy's social structure. I'd been too busy trying to stay alive.
"At the top," she said, "are these brain plants."
Here she displayed the cactus thing I'd had Sargon blast open.
"Claver refers to these growths as nexus plants," she continued. "We've sent flying drones to locate them. This one was attacked by McGill. See how it fared after McGill's action?"
More images followed, aerial shots this time. The field of vines and spiders was burnt, dead. The brain plant had perished, and everything around it had died as well. There were no further signs of activity in the region.
"You see?" Turov asked. "Simplicity itself. While surveying the world and searching for ships, we've located 6 more of these fat cactus-like bastards. They're the beings that tell the trees to grow pods and which type to produce. They make the strategic choices about when and where to attack. They're the true enemy we must destroy to win this conflict."
Drusus cleared his throat and leaned forward.
"I assume you want to fire missiles at each of these locations?"
"That's right. All at once. We'll strike them all over the planet at the same moment."
"Are we sure the spiders won't drive the walkers to attack afterward for the purpose of revenge?"
Turov looked thoughtful.
"Some might. But I doubt it will be a coherent mass attack. Recall when McGill killed the spiders. Some of the walkers nearby attacked his squad, but most wandered aimlessly, as if they'd lost their way. My best xenologists say these aliens operate as if they share a large, distributed mind. If you destroy the higher-level creatures, the rest will become confused.
That's why they targeted our officers, I said suddenly. Maybe they thought we operate the same way. Maybe they thought they could destroy our army by killing our leaders.
Turov gave me another half-smile.
It could be, she said.
Graves spoke up then.
Imperator, he said, what does Claver think of this approach? He knows them better than the rest of us do.
Claver is a fool, a traitor, and half-mad, she said with conviction. He is self-serving, and I don't care what he thinks about anything.
With that, the meeting broke up. There wasn't really much of a discussion. The battle plan had been drawn up. The targets were being located, confirmed, and slated for destruction in the morning. We were to launch a precision strike across the planet all at once. I had to admit that if Turov's plan worked, it would be a stroke of genius. I sincerely hoped that it would.
Chapter 35. It was nighttime, and the only illumination came from our suits and the landing lights of the transport ship itself. This made for a shadowy atmosphere. Dead set on getting some food into my belly before they closed down the line, I headed for the tables and tents they'd set up in the area under the lifter itself. Leaving the meeting, I made a beeline for the chow tent, but I didn't make it before a dark figure accosted me. Claver stepped out from behind one of the thick titanium struts and got into my face.
I knew you'd come this way, he said. I've got to talk to you, McGill.
Glancing at him, I shrugged. I'm getting a tray of food right now, I said. You can join me if you want, but stay on the opposite side of the table. Claver chuckled. He followed me in the food line, choosing an apple off the fruit tree. Our meals always included fresh-grown fruits and vegetables. We had special trees that grew whatever was selected the night before. The cooks had selected apples today, and there were plenty left. I loaded my tray with two heaping plates. I started off with a layer of rice on one plate and a layer of potato paste on the other. On top of both, I ladled a meat and gravy mix. It tasted like pork, but we all knew it wasn't. While I chowed, Claver talked.
"Listen, McGill," he said, "I know we've had our differences in the past, but this is important. You have to hear me out."
Chewing and shoveling, I gave him a nod. I figured as long as I was going to eat anyway, time spent listening to him wasn't wasted.
"Okay, glad to see you're willing to hear me out, at least,"
Claver said, leaning forward. His hand slid across the table toward me. He had a small black device in it.
Thud!
My fork came down in front of his hand, blocking its progress. He yanked his hand back, but left the device. There was blood trickling from his thumb.
"Damn it, boy," he said. "You're so sensitive. It's just a spy blocker. Settle down."
I looked the device over. It could have been a bomb or anything else. I flicked it back toward his side of the table with my fork, then went on eating. "Talk fast," I told him. "I'm almost done with my first plate." He leaned forward again, switching the device on.
"Okay, here's the deal. I know about Turov's plan, her plan to destroy the enemy brain plants."
"She indicated she'd talk to you about it. I take it you don't like the plan?" He shook his head.
"It will start another war pointlessly. It's one thing to have a conflict with the Wurr. It's another to kill all life on one of their colonized worlds. Just think how humans would react to the destruction of a planet full of our kind."
"We aren't going to kill them all," I said. "We're going to eliminate a certain variety of plant, that's all."
"Oh, yeah, right,"
he said with an unpleasant laugh. He picked up a table knife and held it up between us.
"How about I lobotomize you with this?"
"How about I break your neck with these?" I held up my hands. Claver rolled his eyes.
"I'm not threatening you, Claude. I'm making a point. If you cut up a man's brain and send him home to his relatives, they won't be happy.
What Turov proposes will leave a mindless colony on this world. It might even die of neglect, just like an idiot left wandering in the wilderness.
Frowning, I nodded. I had to concede his point. From what I'd seen, we would be crippling this world. Was that an appropriate response? Sure, they'd come to Earth and shot down one of our freighters. My parents had even died in the process. But from their perspective, they hadn't done this to attack our world. They'd run down a pirate ship, Klaver's ship, and destroyed it. Looking at it this way, Klaver was just as responsible for the loss as they were.
"You're telling me this is all a misunderstanding," I said. "One that you caused, by the way, with your failed attempts to trade with them."
"At least my intentions were honorable," Klaver said. "There are often misunderstandings when two new species meet one another. What I'm advocating is a measured response and hopefully a negotiated peace. Remember, they're strong, and they're plaguing our enemies."
Thinking about that, I nodded. "Okay, keep talking. What can I do about this?"
"You can talk to Turov for me. I've tried, I've done my best, but she's not interested. Maybe you can make her see reason before she does something that can't be negotiated away."
I said thoughtfully. "You want me to convince her? How the hell am I going to do that?"
"If anyone can, it's you. Not even Winslade is as good at slick salesmanship as you are."
I snorted in disbelief and pushed away the last of my food. I'd wiped out 7/8 of it, but somehow Klaver had put me off the last bites. I heaved a deep sigh and shook my head. "I'll think about it," I said. "But you overestimate my hold on the Imperator. She's got a mind of her own."
"Don't I know it," Klaver said. "You should give it your best shot if you want that kid of yours to keep breathing."
He stood up, and I did too. I reached a long arm across the table and grabbed his tunic up in a wad. "Is that some kind of threat, Klaver? I could have permed you six ways from Sunday by now."
"No threat. I'm talking about cold realities. These aliens will come for us someday if we keep pissing them off. Some species out here fear the Empire while others are just too busy right now, but they'll all come eventually. The Empire is falling apart."
I let go of him, and he pocketed his spy blocker. I stared after him as he disappeared into the shadowy evening. I wasn't even sure why he wasn't in chains or dead. The only reason I could come up with was that he'd managed to talk Turov into letting him have his freedom. Maybe he had some dirt on her. Heaving a big sigh, I mounted the ramp into the lifter. A few checkpoints later, I found myself activating the touch chimes on Turov's quarters.
"Enter,"
she said. I stepped inside and was immediately surprised. I'd been in lifters in 5 different star systems, but I'd never seen a chamber like this one. It wasn't sumptuous, mind you, but it was well-appointed, considering it was merely a room inside a lifter. The curved walls were covered in silky fabric. The ceiling was relatively high, higher than the usual rooms that often forced me to duck my head. Possibly most startling of all was the chandelier. That's right, there was an honest-to-God chandelier hanging from the ceiling in the center of the chamber. Turov came from the back, which I assumed was a bedroom of sorts. She pushed aside a sheet of cloth that separated her private space from the rest of the room. The curtain curled away from her fingers, then folded itself back so it hung perfectly straight and still.
"Smart cloth," I said, marveling.
"You've decorated this whole place with smart cloth."
"Well," she said, "there wasn't much aboard in the way of luxury items when I was revived."
"Where's the chandelier from, then?"
"The former captain," she said. "He didn't mind if I borrowed it."
Blinking, I gave her a small nod. Her answers had created more questions in my mind than anything else, but I decided they were questions best left unasked.
"Why are you here, James?"
she asked.
I slid my eyes around the room and landed them back on Turov. Despite the fact everyone considered me to be a man full of guile, I was feeling a little uncertain. While I thought about my response for a second, she stretched against a wall, which enhanced her curves. I don't know, I said, smiling. I just thought there was something different about you today. I thought I'd come find out what it was. She smiled. Bingo, I thought. She was an attention seeker through and through. It wasn't always in a sexual sense. She liked to exhibit her prowess in public in any number of ways. The woman was very good at manipulating her way through life any way she could.
You find yourself attracted to a superior officer, she said. I understand. It's a common enough occurrence. In this case, although I'm flattered, I have to deny your unspoken request. It wouldn't be appropriate.
That had never stopped her in the past, but I was willing to let it go. However, this meant my original plan had just evaporated. I'd come here to see if I could make a connection with her before giving her Claver's hard sell. Now it looked like that wasn't going to happen. Well, sir, I said, standing up and towering over her. I guess you're the better of us. I'm sorry to disturb you. I didn't make it to her door. She came around the tiny table that squatted beneath her out-of-place chandelier and touched my chest with soft fingers.
Sit back down, she said.
She sounded a little annoyed, but I clumsily did as she asked. She shook her head and tisked me.
A lady can't give in at the first pass, James. Surely a scoundrel like you knows that. You're supposed to keep trying.
Oh, I said. I get it now. How about this? I reached up and pulled her down into my lap. She sighed disgustedly, but she didn't jump off.
You're the romantic equivalent of a lowland gorilla, she said. I don't know what it is I ever saw in you.
There was a bottle of red wine on the table. I opened it and poured her a glass. She sipped it and offered some to me. I drank a bit, but it was too dry for my taste. Still sitting on my lap, she finally melted. The woman was a strange one. Sure, she could be a cast-iron bitch when she wanted to be, but she could also warm up in private like no other. Soon we were making passionate love. I learned that she indeed had a bedroom behind that smart cloth sheet. What's more, a queen-sized bed nearly filled the room. That had to be a first on a military ship like this one. Afterward, we lay together, wrapped in a thin, twitchy sheet. The bedclothes wanted to rearrange themselves over our bodies, but my feet were hanging over the end of the bed and pissing them off. This was the moment, I knew. I had to make my pitch if I was going to do it at all.
Galena,
I asked.
What is it, James?
I'm worried about tomorrow. I'm worried about destroying all the plant brains.
Why?
Because we might be starting a new war, or at the very least pissing off a species we only just met up with. She laughed.
Why should you care about that? She demanded. You make a habit of pissing off aliens all over the galaxy.
That's true, but this is different. These plant brains might be considered civilians. She lurched up and sat next to me. She stared at me with dark, calculating eyes.
Claver, she said. I smell him on you. He sent you here to my bed, didn't he? That conniving rat.
I said, caught dead to rights. Listen, I said. It doesn't matter who I may have talked to. The truth is the truth. Maybe we should reconsider. Maybe we should talk to the plants, or at least make the attempt. Everyone has access to the translation app I brought back. She gave a hiss of frustration. She threw the sheet off my body.
Get out!
I sat up and began to dress. She stared at me with rage in her eyes.
I should have known, she said. people are always trying to manipulate me. You're worse than Winslade, sucking up like this for something you want.
I'm sorry you feel that way, but I don't think I was any more manipulative than you were today.
What do you mean?
Shrugging, I spread my hands wide. You've always been a beautiful woman, Galena, and you use that mercilessly on the male officers. She grabbed up a handful of her squirming sheets and pulled them over her lovely breasts.
That's a low thing to say, James, she said. It's rude, in fact. I think you're obsessed with women's bodies. To suggest that I misused my personal attributes.
I put my hands on my hips.
Oh, come on, I said. You look great and you use it, that's all I'm saying. Lots of people do that.
She looked at the wall in obvious irritation for about 10 seconds. Then she sighed.
All right,
she said.
You're forgiven. Just don't bring up any more bullshit you hear from Claver. He's got some kind of scheme running, that's all it is. Don't get caught up in it. Now get out of here, I need sleep. And if I let you spend the night, I know I won't get any of that.
I left a short time later with a smile on my face. Sure, I'd failed to convince her that Claver was right, but I'd enjoyed the failure all the same. Chapter 36. When I reached my bunk at last, I found another woman sitting cross-legged on top of it. Natasha? I asked. What's up? She looked me up and down while I removed my breastplate and boots.
I've been waiting for you,
she said at last. What for? She didn't answer right away. Instead, she gave me a reproachful look and crossed her arms.
I had no idea you were still making visits to Turov's quarters.
Denials sprang to mind, but I rejected them all. Instead, I sat on my bunk beside her. She scooted away to the far edge and frowned at me. What about it? I asked. What can't wait for tomorrow's attack?
Not bothering to lie about it? At least that's an improvement.
Yes, I said. I visited Galena tonight, and I'm willing to own up to that. Are you willing to admit you spied on me to figure out where I went? She shifted uncomfortably.
I'll admit I accessed the personnel tracking system. That's part of my job as a tech.
I snorted and put my head back against the wall. I closed my eyes.
Gave you a workout, did she?
Natasha asked. Come on, Natasha. I fought a battle today and marched across miles of blasted land. Give me a break.
Okay. You're right. I'll try to forget about Turov. I'm here because someone among us is sending off-world messages.
That statement got me to snap my eyes open again. Who?
If I knew, I would have said.
What kind of messages? Sent where?
I don't know. They're encoded, encrypted, but someone is doing it. Whoever it is, they're sophisticated enough to set up a shield bubble around themselves, a barrier that keeps me from knowing who they are or precisely where they are. I can only guess that it's one of our techs. Who else would have the skill?
Climbing off my bunk, I rearranged my tunic and teased the nanites into sealing my breastplate into place again. Can you give me a hint as to the source? I asked.
The general location is inside or around this lifter. Sorry, that's pretty vague, I know. They aren't transmitting right now, and I doubt they're sitting at the same spot waiting to be caught anyway.
I looked at her. Why are you telling me this? Why not one of the officers? She chewed her lip.
Because I thought it might be one of the officers. Turov or Winslade. Remember Tech World and Machine World? They've made back-channel deals before.
Understanding her concerns, I nodded. If one of our top commanders is the guilty party, it will be very difficult for a non-com to accuse them.
Do you think it's Turov?
She asked. Give me the exact times of the transmissions. She gave me the times, and after thinking about it, I was able to personally vouch for the Imperator's innocence. This didn't please Natasha, but she understood.
That leaves Winslade, she said. No one else could have access to this kind of sophisticated equipment.
You're forgetting about one other possible culprit. Claver. She stared at me.
Isn't he in the brig?
Maybe he should be, I said. Leaving Natasha behind, I went in search of Claver. I asked around and finally found him outside the ship, sleeping in the trenches. That puzzled me. I crouched over his sleeping form, my boots sending crumbled bits of dirt into the trench. Why was Claver outside? Why not wrangle a bunk in the lifter? Either the officers had tossed him out here, or he'd exiled himself.
"You going to shoot me or strangle me this time?"
Claver asked. He didn't look like he was awake, but he was. I wasn't surprised. You didn't live a long life as a rodent like Claver if you weren't alert to danger at all times. "Lovely night out here," I said. "Plenty of fresh air, soot, and just a touch of residual radiation." Cautiously, Claver unfolded himself from a sleeping position and sat up. He eyed me from the bottom of the trench.
"How did Torov take my recommendations?"
he asked. "She hated them." He chuckled.
"Why am I unsurprised? What did you do, just walk in there and tell her, 'Hey, Claver says to change around all your plans?'"
"Something like that." He sighed heavily.
"I thought you were a smooth operator. I thought you knew how to push a lady's buttons."
"I did my damnedest." He cocked his head, climbed out of the trench, and looked me over.
"You slept with her, didn't you?"
He laughed uproariously.
"Good job, then. I take it back. You did your best. That woman is almost impossible to sway. Pity."
"Why are you out here, under the stars?" I asked. "Why not sleep in the lifter? You're a civilian, but you still have special status as a traitor."
"Because I knew I couldn't count on you. It would have been so much better if I could have. I had to take action. Now, events are in motion, and they're out of my control."
I looked over my shoulder at the lifter. The silvery skin of the ship reflected the bright stars of the region. Here and there, floodlights illuminated patches of the scorched ground beneath the transport, but most of the landscape was black. "Someone or something is going to hit the lifter," I said. "That's what you're telling me, isn't it? Is that what you arranged?"
"Nonsense," he said. "I'd never do that. You're paranoid. A good trait for a Varus legionnaire, I get that. But wrong, nonetheless."
He started to climb out of the trench, but my hand shot out and pushed him back down.
"What?" he sputtered. "You trying to arrest me again, boy? On what kind of trumped-up charges this time?"
"I know about your transmissions. I know you've been sending off-world messages." Even in the dim light, I could tell he looked startled.
"That's crazy talk," he said. "You're clearly delusional, veteran. Don't worry, though, it's just death lag. Happens to a lot of good men. You get a little funny in the head after a rough battle and a revive."
"I didn't die out there," I said. "And I don't get traumatized by death in battle anyway, not anymore." He looked me over appraisingly. My eyes were uncompromising, and my grip on his arm was unbreakable.
"Look, McGill," he said, "you can arrest me or even kill me if you want to, but it won't do you any good. Let me give you a piece of advice. All that matters in the real universe is who holds whose leash. Remember that."
My thoughts swirled around in my head. I was seriously considering shooting him on the spot. I could try arresting him instead, but it seemed pointless. If I shot him right now, though, that might change the future. Unknown disasters might be averted. Maybe not the calamity he'd summoned this time, whatever it was, but possibly the next one. "Back on Tech World," I said, "you were my prisoner. You tapped on your tapper and summoned an unholy army of the Tau to assail my legion. That was a dark day, and you were full of excuses as to why you did it. I think you're going to have to answer for your sins one day, and maybe, just maybe, today is that day."
"I'll come back," Claver said confidently. "I always prepare for death. I'm ready for it."
"You might be prepared for a regular death," I said, "but I'm not talking about that. Have you ever permed a man, Claver?" He blinked at me.
"Accidentally, maybe. Like the Tau back on—"
"No," I said. "I'm talking about a human. A man who's accustomed to catching a revive now and then. Someone like a legionnaire or a magua. You ever permed such a being?"
No, he admitted, looking at me curiously. I clearly had his undivided attention.
I can't say that I have.
I've done it, I said. Not officially, not because I was ordered to. I did it on my own initiative. I know it can